Welcome to Hashtime with Navguzi Chiwanuka. This is a place where we help you unravel social constructs, discuss self-development in line with mental health, emotional well-being, and everything in between that directly or indirectly affects us in the millennial world around us. If you're hearing my voice for the first time and are the kind of person who is not scared of being a better version of yourself, even if it requires you to contradict who you were 24 hours ago, consider this your virtual home. I'm your host, Navguzi Chiwanuka, and I cannot wait to engage with you in the various conversations. I've had to replay the podcast intro over and over again, and I'm not sure there is a better way to introduce today's guest. It almost feels like the intro was recorded specifically for this episode, because for the past 6 years, I have known Bibian. She embodies the podcast description. Chidenye will unravel whatever social construct has to be unraveled. She will choose self-development any day while making sure that her mental health is protected. Perhaps I should apologize for taking long to bring her on the podcast. And so without taking much of your time, let's dive into the conversation. Hi, Bibian. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
You know, at first I was like, hey, if I talk to her again, am I still going to be starstruck? But this has started off so well.
Yeah.
It's like there's a time when I was supposed to moderate a conversation and my crush was on the panel. I was like, I'm going to die. If this guy smiles back, I'm going to lose my mind.
But did he smile though?
I figured I am a normal person to him, so we just went on with it.
Yeah. Of course, that's what it would be.
So, Bibian, finally, welcome to Hashtime with Navguzi Chiwanuka.
Thank you. I've been looking forward to this.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I was just like, no, just be patient. Anyway,
you... I got the invite, I was like, oh, I thought you would never ask.
Well, at least here we are, mid-year 2023. Yeah. This is a huge landmark for me, you know.
I mean, I hope it'll turn out to be that for you.
It's going to be great, I am sure. There's not been a moment where I've seen you do the opposite. You're just always there to shine. So for someone that does not have a single awareness of who Bibian is, I know for the Nigerian community, most of them know you, I believe. But now here we are in Uganda, and I'm very sure there are people that have not heard of Chinenye.
Wow, you got the pronunciation. It's so perfect.
Do you know how obsessed I am with the Igbo?
Really?
Hey, you don't know. Well, there is an Igbo song. I'll sing it for you at some point. There is an Igbo song that I love so much. I learned it in 2017.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that.
I'll sing it for you. So for those that do not have a single awareness of who Chinenye is, please take us through it.
Well, I think I'd like to start from the very beginning. Growing up in a village in Ebonyi State, Nigeria, I was born some 29 odd years ago, and I grew up in a very large family, a family of 8 girls, and then my parents. Yeah, so I mean, I'm the third girl, so I basically witnessed most of the other younger ones being born and raised, and all. So I went to a private secondary school, which is important because it laid the foundation to most of what I've come to become now. A lot of debating back in secondary school, and then went to university. I got a scholarship because I represented the states.
Wow.
At the presidential level of that's the national level of the debating championship, and my state won. So we all got scholarship from the state government then. So that was how I went to the university, because I actually come from a poor home, so to say, but not so poor that we couldn't eat. My parents were farmers. Yeah, my dad was a farmer before he passed. My mom's still a farmer now, and she had a small restaurant she used to run. So we always had food, we always had shelter, we always had clothing. But I mean, the other things that were not like the basic necessities were a bit tough to come by. So being able to go to the university was because of the scholarship that I got. And at the university, I studied law, mm-hmm. and I still represented the university at the university debating championship. And that was also cool. And I went to law school, which was the first time. I did all my education back home in Ebonyi State, primary, secondary, I think university too. The first time I ever left home was to do law school in Lagos. And then after that, I was posted for my national youth service. I ended up serving in Abuja. Mm-hmm. I got a job with a law firm there, worked in the law firm for a while, and the managing partner wanted me to move to the Lagos office. I moved to the Lagos office and the pandemic happened. I quit my job in the middle of the pandemic, started my own practice.
Friend.
And then after running my practice for about a year, I think I sort of got bored with law practice and decided to do something else. And from there, everything just sort of moved really so fast. And here we are.
Yeah.
Pursuing an entirely different career in the tech industry and loving every bit of it.
Mm-hmm. The BBN of 5 to the age of 11, what was she like? Was she always, besides the debating bit, because I'm seeing this is something you've been doing for a really long time.
Well, I think I'll start from, I remember when I was about 3, which is very
you
strange.
You do?
Yeah. Because my 2 elder sisters, my mom would always take them to school every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd cry that I want to go to school with them.
Uh-huh.
But then I was too young to start. So I think I was too young to start school at the time.
Yeah.
So because I always bothered my mom would take me to, I think my sisters were in private nursery schools or primary school. I can't remember the details. But then she would take me to the community primary school, to the headmaster's office. And then the headmaster would ask me to put my hand above my head.
Mm-hmm.
And if my right hand could touch my left ear, then I was old enough to start school. And no matter how hard I tried, it never worked. So it was almost like a ritual. Almost every morning we would do that and then I'll cry back home and we'll do it over and over again. So I ended up going to the community primary school. I ended up starting there because I think the headmaster got tired of me crying every morning. I was like, you know what, just put her in primary one. And that was how I started off in the community primary school. I think I did that up till the age of 9. So most of it was a blur. Mm-hmm. I still remember my primary school teachers, but I can't remember anything spectacular happening in the community primary school. I just went with the flow, losing all the textbooks that was given to me and having my parents pay for it. And then I think when I got to primary 6, I was about 9 at the time. And I went on a holiday to visit my aunt and my uncle. My mom's cousin got married to my dad's cousin. And, you know, so they were related to me from both sides of the family. I went to visit them and I refused to come back home because I was having such a good time. So I started schooling there. They had to enroll me in a school to finish up my primary school.
Yeah.
And while I was there, I think my primary school result was always really not good.
Mm-hmm.
But my aunt was a teacher. So she was, you know, I'm not going to let you continue that way here. So she insisted. I think she promised me if I was able to get either first or second position, she was going to get me a wristwatch or something like that. So that sort of spurred me to read harder. She helped me improve my handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't all promise she did that. I think I got beaten at some point for not performing very well in school.
Yeah.
As not so cool as her methods were, God rest her soul, it really helped me because then I got better in school. And I think I represented the school in a quiz competition in primary school and we came first. And that's like the most important thing I remember. And mm-hmm. I got into the private secondary school at the age of 10 and, you know, everything else happened.
Does that make you an early scholar?
Because
thinking about the age of 10. Because here,
I have never really fancied school to say. I mean, it's not something I look forward to doing.
Uh-huh.
I'm more of the very practical person. I like to put whatever I've learned in practice, but the process of learning is not really something, especially when it's like streamlined learning. I can learn, I'm better off self-taught. so I can learn so many things on my own. But, you know, mm-hmm. putting me through the stress of school, I had exams, they give me anxieties, I had tests. So all of that, I didn't quite enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But the other processes, every other thing that came with schooling, I totally enjoyed that.
You speak of the 8 girls in a home.
Yep.
My goodness. The first time I got the information, I was like, eh? Eh, what? So why I point this, before I even get to ask you this, I grew up from a single parent kind of system.
Yeah.
My mother raised me with my 2 brothers, and the system in which we were raised, they were able to take care of me when she was not home. If they were playing soccer and I got hungry, hey, I'm going to stand at the pitch. I'm like, dude, come and cook for me. I am hungry. But then I step out in the bigger society and I am seeing there is a whole different story. They are talking about how it's girls who are supposed to cook, boys are not supposed to be in the kitchen and things like that. And I'm very confused. So growing in a home where the only male person is your dad, was there a moment where you felt confused when you came out to the bigger society, hearing all these rules, girls are supposed to be doing this, boys are not supposed to be doing that? What was it like for you?
I mean, the fact that we were all girls, there was never really, and to be very honest, I didn't grow up doing a lot of chores. There were, I had elder sisters. I was sandwiched in the middle. Uh-huh. So I had elder sisters who did the heavy lifting. And then I had the younger ones who did the things I was supposed to do. Mm. And I was very lazy as a kid. So I could even give up my food for you to do my share of the house chores. So
I didn't
get to do a lot of things that people got to do. The only reason I can do basic things was because my mom, whenever my mom was home, she would insist on me mm-hmm. doing certain things, because she would always feel like at some point you're going to grow up to a point where you'd be independent, and I wouldn't want you not having some basic skills. So that's how I got to be able to do some things. And then the others I learned as I had grown. I grew up not, like, there was really no gender-based roles, because, I mean, we were all girls, so I didn't know any other way. I just felt like everybody had to do things for themselves.
Yeah.
I didn't think that because you were a boy, you couldn't do certain things, because, like, I had no such notions, even though I never really saw my dad doing chores or any other things. But I think there were times when my mom wasn't around. I think my dad cooked.
Mm-hmm.
When we were much younger, and other times he would help iron my clothes because I like having my school uniforms ironed. And there were basic things that he did, but he was never really always at home. He was always traveling, either for work-related stuff or business-related stuff. So I didn't see much of him during the house chores era. And then we were so many of us, there was enough hands to do things. So my not seeing him do things was probably, I always felt that maybe because there were so many people, there were already so many other people doing the same thing, so there was no need for him to do it. I never saw it from the perspective of him not doing it because he's the man of the house. And I think that sort of influenced me even before I got to know about feminism and the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in any role being assigned to a gender, because, you know, I don't think a woman should do this because she's a woman. You can do certain things because you want to do them or because you're better at them, not because of your gender. So I didn't, the notion of gender-based roles and all of the other bits that comes with being a boy or being a girl, I had no clue about them. And also the community I grew up in is very, very patriarchal. So mm-hmm. some of these patriarchy rules and regulations were strictly adhered to. But somehow I feel like I was insulated from them because I had absolutely no clue until I started growing up, got into social media and, you know, started hearing some of them.
Whoa, it had to get to social media first.
Yeah, social mm-hmm. media. And then in uni, I think from some of the female lecturers, I can still remember vividly, I don't know if it was my first or second year, one of the lecturers came and she was from some other department. She said, since we're studying to become lawyers, that from our second year, we should make sure we have boyfriends. Third year, we should make sure we're engaged. Fourth year or final year, you should either be married or, you know, very close to getting married, because you becoming a lawyer and not having someone already serious, a man already seriously talking to you about marriage, your chances of getting married reduces the moment you start practicing law, because they'll feel like you're too exposed, you're too wise, you're too, you know, you're just too much for them.
Did that scare you?
It made absolutely no sense to me. You're not telling me to focus on reading my book so I can become the best lawyer. You're telling me to focus. I mean, it made absolutely no sense to me. So most of the societal conditioning that comes with coming from a patriarchal society, I didn't get them from home, because my home was more of a female-dominated home. Mm-hmm. So I mostly got them outside. And then, you know, taking care of siblings, it's what you had to do because you're the older one, not because you're the lady amongst them, because we're all girls. So I never really got to experience most of those stuff.
I found it very, should I say, beautiful when you mentioned that your mother was telling you that these are life skills that I want you to have, not coming from this thing of you are a woman, you need these skills for your future.
I read people on social media saying their parents tell them things like, oh, you better learn how to cook so that you can cook for your husband. Yeah. I don't think I ever heard that from my mom. I think the only time my mom played the husband card was either when, I think one time I was fighting with my elder sisters and she was like, no, you can't do that in my house. You either get your own house or you move to your husband's house to do that. Or when I want to take some of her wrappers and she goes, nope, my husband got that for me. You have to go wait for your husband to get it. So, I mean, it's all jokes, nothing serious. All of those societal, no, I didn't get that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. At what point did you feel like lawyering was the best career choice for you? Was it because of the debating that you had this idea in your mind?
No, I'm going to be very sincere with you. There's no grand point. I didn't have a lot of role models growing up. Uh-huh. So there was no grand awakening that I was like, yeah, I'm going to be like, it was just this thing where if you were in the arts class, mm-hmm. and you want to create the impression that you're successful, you become a lawyer. If you're in science class, if you want to create the impression that you're successful, you study medicine. So if you don't study medicine, it just feels like you didn't succeed as a science student. If you don't study law, you didn't succeed as a law student. So it was just almost always the first choice for, that was what I felt. And, you know, that was what the story was at the time. So, and I was good in science and arts, but to choose what field I wanted to go to, I felt, okay, I'm going to try in SS1. I don't know how it is in Uganda, but in Nigeria, in most schools in Nigeria, your SS1, you're going to do both science and arts. And then after your SS1, then when you're going into the senior year 2, you can decide to do either arts or science. So I said, whichever one I passed better, mm-hmm. that's the field I'll go to.
Wow.
So I realized that to pass physics and chemistry, I had to study really hard. And then I would manage a B. But for government, literature, CRK, the rest of them, I could literally write the exams and manage 96, 92 without, you know, not reading so much. I was like, no, I'm not going to stress myself studying chemical properties and physics and all of them. That's how I ended up in art class. And I wrote the JAMB exam, mm-hmm. and I passed mm-hmm. very well. I didn't get admission the first year because I wanted to leave home. I applied to schools very far away from home. And I'm very sorry to say this, but the situation in the Nigerian educational system, even with very good results, sometimes you struggle to get admission. So the universities I chose, they didn't give me admission. So I wasted 1 year. I had to rewrite JAMB, and then I got admitted. I think I was the highest scoring student for my set that got admitted to study law. But then my dad still had to speak to somebody before my name showed up on the admission list.
Are you serious?
It's really messed up.
Comes for the academic performance, it's almost easy.
No, I remember vividly, I had 286 out of 400 in my JAMB score, and the second person had 252. So the margin was very wide, and I still struggled to get admission. So yeah, that's how I ended up studying law. And I think I basically got into it when I was already in the process, just making the best out of whatever I got myself into.
Mm-hmm. And now yeah. Here you are as a lawyer. When was it? Which year was it? Was it in 2018 or 17 when you
were called? I was called in 2017.
17.
Yeah, that was in December.
So those were those 3 years of you practicing?
I practiced between, I think I got my first legal job in 2018. I started working in February 2018 and I worked with the law firm up to June 2020. So I practiced law until, I practiced actively until December 2021. But now and again, I still do some bits and pieces. I mean, I've not totally abandoned law practice, but I'm not very active in there.
I'm seeing you doing all this hard work. Your dad has to chip in a word for you to be enrolled at the university. You work hard for you to be called to the bar and you're like, you know what? Nah, this is not the thing. You know, when you first announced it, I was like, ah. No, actually, the first shocker was, I've left my job and I have no plan. I was like, is this chick okay? You know, we don't have video on, but I'm already holding my head like, is she okay? How is she doing this? But I was like, I was ready to just see what is going to happen. How scary was it for you to have yourself invested and then also feel like, you know what, I'm going?
I don't know. In 2020, I think I left because I wasn't exactly comfortable with the work environment. The COVID thing happened and we had to start working from home. And the firm that I was working with, I think they had some internal financial issues and they had to slash our salaries by 50%. So I had just moved to a new city. I moved to Lagos in February 2020 and I had a pay bump. My salary was increased by 75%.
Whoa.
And then the COVID happened and we had a lockdown 1 month later and my salary was slashed by 50%. Mm-hmm. So I had 50% decrease. So I went from earning so high to earning less than what I was earning before I got the salary bump.
Wow.
So I was working really hard, almost like 8 days a week. I was working round the clock. And it wasn't just, I don't mind putting in the hard work as long as the environment feels conducive for me.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just the hard work for me. I was working way too hard, earning almost nothing. Because by the time you paid for your subscription, I was in meetings. So my data bundles, everything, the time I paid for all of that, I had almost nothing left at the end of the month. So the work environment wasn't the best for my mental health. So I noticed sometimes when I had my laptop beep for meetings, I would have panic attacks. And, you know, at some point I was like, nah, I'm done with this. I don't care. I was applying for jobs. I hadn't gotten any, but I was like, I'm done. Jobs or no jobs. I'm leaving. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll think about it later. But for now, I need to quit. So yeah. I called my boss, told him I was going to resign. He tried to talk me out of it. I was like, nah, mine's middle. I sent him my notice. And after I sent him my notice, I didn't know what I was going to do. It was my godmom who sort of pitched, you know, you could register. I thought I was going to freelance, but she said you could register your own law firm and start from somewhere. I don't have any connections. I was barely 3 years old at the bar.
Yeah.
People who do this are people who have at least 10,
that's
15,
the thing.
20 years.
I was looking at you like,
you have the pedigree. This is a game of clout. People need to hear your name and say, oh yeah, I can hand my case over, I can give my brief to this person. Nobody knows me. Mm-hmm. Like, just start from somewhere, start from social media. And that was exactly what I did. Started a law firm, it was wholly digital, no office. We just had an address where people could drop off documents.
Yeah.
We didn't have an office space, everything just did from my laptop. Got clients. I remember the first client I got, I almost got, because I ended up not getting the client. They were going to pay me about, I think, 20,000 naira per month. They wanted me to be a retainer. So they were going to pay 20,000 naira per month. And I'm like, yeah, if I'm able to get at least 5 of these people, that'll be 100 grand.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like I'll be doing so much work. And then when I thought I'd almost closed the brief, the person turned up. I was like, I don't think I can sustain this with my current earnings. I'm sorry. I'm like, can you pay 15? I mean, I can take 10,000. I was so desperate.
Yeah.
I was so desperate, but then it didn't work out. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to keep trying. I'll give this 3 months. If nothing happens in... No, I said I was going to give myself six months. Mm-hmm. If nothing happens in 6 months, I'll dust my CV back up and start searching for a job. But 1 month later, I got this really wonderful client from Facebook. And I think from the brief I got from the client, everything changed, basically. I got more clients, and the ending of my 2020... beginning of 2021, it was just so amazing. I had work to do. Mm-hmm. I outsourced, made some cool cash, and you know, I got bored and decided,
oh my God,
I'm tired. It was all routine for me. It was just like sitting at home, making money, not doing a lot of work. I didn't want to go back to working in fast-paced law firms. So I wasn't doing a lot of work. I had a lot of time. I started exploring and decided to see if I could go back to considering tech. And that's basically how I got here.
Going back to considering tech, is it something that you had considered before?
Yeah, I'm quite creative. Mm-hmm. So I've always been fascinated with the idea of being able to create things, either as a software developer, a product manager. I didn't know what the names were at the time, but, you know, being able to understand what goes on behind me, being able to scroll through Facebook and, you know, see posts. I want to know what goes on behind. How are we able to do this? How are we able to get this very beautiful user interface? What happens behind? So I've always been fascinated by it. But then when I think about writing codes, doing analysis, and I just felt like it wasn't something I could do. It's something that requires a lot of effort. And I'm always all about the easy life. I want to put in minimum work and get the best results. Mm-hmm. So when I realized I had enough time to consider it, I went back to it.
You know, when you made the announcement, we were just getting used to, do you call it Bull? Am I allowed to just call
it Bull? B-U-L, actually.
It's just B-U-L, not Bull?
B-U-L, yeah.
I've always called it Bull in my head.
My friends call it Bull, actually. But I prefer B-U-L.
We're just getting used to B-U-L. I'm fascinated by this person. And I was talking about you with some of my friends, like, yo, there is this young girl. Let me show you what she's doing. You know, she has this digital law firm. It's my first time to hear about this thing. And then before I know it, there is an announcement. Guys, I'm moving. I'm leaving this. I'm going to be doing a different... And I'm like, when do I follow this girl properly? Like, can I use a straight line to follow? Because 1 minute you're like, I need to learn from Bibian. And then Bibian jumps to something else like, dude, calm down.
I think at all times, it's just always been this part of my life. I've always felt the need to explore. I've always been an explorer in every area. It's just that adulthood has given me the leverage to be able to do that on my own terms. Because as a kid, your parents basically guide you and you need approval to do certain things. But now as an adult, I can decide this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do this and still be able to do it. I never wanted to run my own business. The idea of managing people in large scale, being in charge of finances, day-to-day running, they don't sit well. I don't like the administrative work. And to be able to get the firm to the point where I can outsource all of that or get someone in to do it, I would need to put in the work. And I didn't want to put in that work, to be honest. So I figured if I wanted to earn as much as or close to what I was earning running my own business, the only thing that could give me that was working in tech. Mm-hmm. Because most people, as you, I came to tech for the money. I mean, that's part of the reason. But law part, if I had continued on the path I was going with my law firm, I don't think there's any company that would be able to pay me what the business was paying me at the entry level role. I mean, eventually I'll get to that point. But sometimes I look at it, I'm like, it's going to be very difficult to get to that point, because if I had continued on the path that was, I would still be growing in the legal industry and not just growing in the tech industry. But I mean, I get to be able to just work. I want to work, give my best to a company and get paid at the end of the month. Just tell me what I need to do. I'll be proactive when I need to be, take initiative at some point. But I don't want to manage a business. It's not something I enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first call that we had, I was trying to ask you how best you were staying on course to do these online courses, because I think I had trouble finishing a course in a very short period of time. And you told me that you were preparing for something that required you to put in the day's work and sometimes even the night.
Yeah.
And then I think that's where, when you had made this announcement that you were leaving and you had done preparations, I was like, this could be it. And yet when we were on social media, it felt like you had just walked from your bedroom and you're walking into the sitting room. And I was like, how easy can that be, really?
No, it's not easy at all. So as someone with a very, very short attention span, I've not been medically diagnosed with ADHD, so I don't want to claim that, but my attention span is very short. Teaching myself, learning online is always very difficult. But what I try to do for myself is I set targets for myself. Like, this is where I need to get to. I don't care how I end up getting there.
Mm-hmm.
So if it means doing 2 hours of work every day to get to that point, I'm going to do it. If it means not being able to do anything 5 days in a week and then doing 12 hours of work in one day, I'm going to do it and get there. So I really cannot predict how I do some of these things. So it's very difficult. When people come to me for mentorship, it's usually very difficult for me because I might tell you one thing and do something entirely different. I will tell you what is supposed to be, but yeah, I'll probably not do that because it won't work for me. So, and I wouldn't want to tell you something and then end up doing something entirely different. So part of the reasons I like paid employment is because you're bound by some kind of contract that you sign. So I have to show up at work every day.
Mm-hmm.
When I was running my business, sometimes I wake up on Monday and I don't want to do a damn thing. I don't open my laptop. I just stay in bed all day, probably watch TV for the rest of the day. I'll be done with watching TV around 5 p.m.
Whoa.
And I'll spend from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. working. 4 hours of work will probably cover me for the entire week. So there was really no method to it for me. So I did that for the online courses I was taking. I was taking so many courses on Coursera, just trying to have a hang of the entire, I wanted to just have a lay of the land in the tech industry. I needed to know what I was getting myself into, if I could handle it. And if I couldn't, if there's anything I could do to support myself in any way. So while I was doing the academic preparations, I was also doing the financial preparations. Switching from one industry to the other can be very expensive.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, preparing myself mentally for the journey. And I wanted to move to Canada.
Yeah.
But then I thought about the fact that moving to Canada, I would have to continue practicing law. So when the opportunity came, when I got the suggestion to move to the UK and I saw that they had conversion courses, if you were in a different industry and you wanted to move to the tech industry, you could take some courses and, you know, basically prepare yourself and be able to get jobs in. I grabbed it with both hands and came here. The last 1 year plus, it's been 18 months. It's not been easy, to be very honest. It's been one hell of a journey, but it's been really, really rewarding.
Yeah.
So for me to get to this point, I had to prepare myself academically. I took the courses. Then financially, I also took some financial literacy classes just so that I'm able to prepare my finances. I got a mentor, and then I made sure I had like really good support system, because moving across continents, it can take a mental toll on people. So I just made sure to prepare myself to be able to face whatever it is that was going to come. Not as easy as it looked on social media. I tried to share some of the backstories, but I know I'm never probably going to be able to capture everything fully, but it's not as easy as it looks.
Then there is you in the UK. What are some of the culture shocks that you may have experienced?
Oh my God, there are so many of them. I think the first culture shock I experienced was my friend came to pick me at the airport.
Uh-huh.
So I had gotten my stuff, put them in the car. Then I was going to get into the front seat. And she was like, do you want to drive? What do you want to drive? She said, you're going to the driver's side. I was like, no, I'm going to the passenger side. And when I opened the door and there was the staring, I was like, what is going on here? I had read that in books, but I mean, seeing the staring on the right-hand side, it just, and we drove out. We're done with that. We drove out. And she was driving on the left-hand side of the road. I'm like, whoa, what's going on? What are you doing? It was crazy. So I had to start programming my mind like, okay, this guy's driving. And the roads were so tiny. How the cars not scratch each other on this road? It was just, everything was, it was just like my head was spinning. And then I get out of the house. You're trying to cross the road. Uh-huh. I have to mentally prepare myself because in Nigeria, the cars will be coming from, I don't even know that. I think the cars are supposed to be coming from your right-hand side or so. No, the cars are supposed to be coming from your left-hand side. But here, they come from your right-hand side. So I had to prepare myself mentally. Instead of looking just one way, I have to look both ways over and over again just to be sure I don't get knocked over by a car. So that's, and I think that was the first culture shock. Then the second one was the cold. I came in January. So I've always heard it's quite cold here. But I don't think anything prepares you for how cold it really is until you experience it. I was trying to explain it to my friends, but there's no explaining it. So that, and the fact that your houses are so tiny.
Oh, yeah?
Jesus. Like, so tiny. You get into someone's sitting room, and it's less than the size of an average room in Nigeria.
Wow.
Yeah, so everything is just all packed together. And yeah, there was just bits and pieces. The names of places, how you say certain things, the fact that the English people, the English language is just something else. You spell a very long word, and then you say it's Leicester. But you spell it as L-E-I-C-E-S-T-E-R. I mean, somewhere in my head, I say something entirely different. So it was just, the whole thing was just all over the place. But I mean, having been here for about 18 months, I've sort of gotten a hang of it.
And yeah. Let's go to the place where I met you. It was in the digital spaces.
Yeah, Facebook.
It's definitely 2017. Because that time, it was 2017. I was in Rwanda at that time. And that's where someone shared a post of yours. And I was like, this is some interesting person. And I started following you. And in that period of, I think, following you up, you sent me a friend request. And I'm like, she has sent me. man, you don't know what she do to some people. What was Bibian's life like in her period of active digital influencing? I know it didn't start right off the bat in 2017. This is something that I saw you grow into, I don't know, 2018, should we say, or 19?
I think I got actively, I can't remember when I started actively influencing. Mm-hmm. It just came off from people asking if I could share. I used to share people's businesses on my wall, review products. If I patronize someone on Facebook, I'd write reviews for them and then they'll make sales. At some point I thought, you know what, I could actually monetize this. And then I started influencing, making adverts for people and stuff like that. I got signed contracts to, you know, make posts as an influencer for brands, became brand ambassador and all of that. It was all so cool. It wasn't like a whole lot of money, but it was something tangible. We could get something on the side. And it was fun at first, but it stopped being fun. Because It got really messy. Apart from the fact that most times when you pay me to write, I actually have writer's block for the most time. So it made writing more difficult because I felt like I was monetizing my talent and there it was a bit messed up for me. And some of the brands that I referred, it started in bits and pieces with people coming to me to tell me that the product I advertised, maybe the person they paid the vendor and the vendor didn't deliver.
Mm-hmm.
And I became a mediator trying to get the vendor to deliver. And at some point, I was like, how much do these people even pay me to make me go through this stress?
Yeah.
I give visibility to your business and then you still stress me afterwards. And the brands, some of the brands that I influenced were, I think one of them turned out to be fraudulent. And I took a major hit after that.
This is what happened last year?
No, that was in 2021.
2021.
Yeah. So I was influencing for the brand. Yeah. And then I stopped influencing about 3 months or so after I stopped influencing. The business backed up. So people still felt like I was somehow responsible for the issues that the business had, even after I stopped influencing 3 months. So I think I understood to a very large extent how far my influencing goes.
Mm-hmm.
So most times I don't even have to write anything about a brand, just sharing that I use the brand could spur people to, you know, patronize the brand or think the brand a good brand. Sometimes even as much as taking pictures with someone or making a birthday post for someone could make people go get close to the person. And if the person turns out not to be a very good person, I catch some flack for that,
mm-hmm.
just because of my personal relationship with them. So you just, at some point I was like, okay, first of all, I'm going to take away the financial aspect of this, the business aspect of this. I'm done influencing. I stopped influencing in 2021. I stopped paid influencership. Like, I didn't want to deal with any of that. So if I write a review for a business, it's from my personal experience.
Yeah.
If I share, I also used to share a lot of things. Like I used to share a lot of things, money related, some investments that I got into, some money saving platforms. I shared all of that because if I see something good, I talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized that while some people will follow you with some kind of discretion, like they should be able to make some decisions for themselves, a lot of people don't think before making decisions. So if you say something is good, they don't bother making any research, trying to see if it's good for them.
Yeah.
They just go head on. And, you know, if they get burnt, if they cash out of the investment platforms, you don't get credit for it. But if you get burnt,
yeah,
it becomes solely your responsibility. So whenever I made posts for investments or any financial platforms, I always ask people to do their due diligence. So whenever things went wrong, people completely ignored the bit where I asked people to do their due diligence. They said, as an influencer, I was supposed to do the due diligence for them
before putting
it up. So it was just so messy, and I just stepped away from it. But even the fact that I stepped away from it in 2021 did not change anything. So when some other business I got involved in investment platforms I got involved in 2022 packed up, I still caught some flack for it.
Yeah,
even
yeah,
when I
yeah,
did not
yeah.
outrightly ask anyone to mm-hmm. get invested or, you know, put their money anywhere, I still, you know, it was just so messy. So I decided to step away entirely from it. Whatever money I was getting from it, at all times, I always prioritize my peace of mind. So if something is paying me very well, but it's taking away my peace of mind, you better keep the money. I don't want anything to do with it.
Right.
So I stepped away entirely from it, and it's been peaceful.
For the madness that happened last year, I think part of me was like, thank God she's offline. Because I don't know how messy it would have been.
They didn't spare me. Even the fact that I was offline didn't even save me.
Oh, really?
No. Well, I still got screenshots from so many people. It was crazy. It was wild.
Aye.
It was wild.
Man, that year taught me as well. Much as I wasn't, you know, into it, totally invested, I was like, what? People can look so genuine and they're not.
It's crazy. I mean, I've never really spoken about how much it affected me and all of that, but I just feel like that's my personal business. It's for me to handle mm-hmm. however I deem fit. I don't think I owe the people on Facebook that aspect. I give whatever I want to give. I put out whatever I want to put out there. So the bit I don't want to put out, it's entirely my business.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That part where you talked about, you know, wielding so much influence on people. When I saw that post, I felt extremely, you know, I don't know, do I say happy that I know this kind of person, very truthful and able to have moments of self-assessment where you don't just take advantage of the power that you have and you're like, you know what? I've noticed
it's,
that
it's
whatever.
It's actually scary. It's scary. It's very, very scary. I sometimes do things and expect that people would unfollow me as a result of it, but it just backfires. I get more followers.
Yeah.
I am so dismissive. I have never set out to grow my Facebook audience. Like, I don't do anything with the hope that I'll get more followers. So there are people who share their businesses. There are people who share videos. I've had people approach me and ask for ways to build their social media audience. And I have absolutely no clue.
Yeah.
I don't do anything in particular. Like, I don't streamline my posts, target my posts to. The only place I sort of streamline my posts, try to make my timeline beautiful, is on Instagram. And my Instagram is currently private, so I'm not even accepting new followers on Instagram. So I'm just doing it for the aesthetics for myself. So on Facebook, I don't set out to do anything to grow followers, but every day I get, if I'm being very modest, I get at least 10 followers every day.
Wow.
Last week alone, I got about 300 followers.
Ah.
Just last week alone. Yeah. So it's something that bothers me.
Uh-huh.
Because sometimes before I put anything out, I have to read it over and over and over again, see from different angles. How is this person going to interpret this? Is this person going to think that I'm outrightly asking them to do this?
Yeah.
And if you read some of my posts, most times I try to cover as many angles as possible so you don't misconstrue what I'm saying. I try not to be controversial. I try not to share things. It's almost like my world is an echo chamber, because most times when I share things, people tend to agree with it. But that's me being careful, because I don't know how this person is going to interpret this. I don't know the level of influence I have on the person sat next to them. And then they'll probably see it, think something else, and they'll hold me responsible for whatever their understanding of it is. So it's a bit like I've been working on eggshells and it's tiring.
Right.
So most times you get to view my WhatsApp status, so you see how chaotic that is. You see how chaotic my WhatsApp status can get. But Facebook, I try to curate Facebook, because I don't want anybody to say BBN did or BBN said. I just don't have the strength for that.
What do you think digital influencers should avoid? Is there something specific that, you know, from your experience that you feel like they should be stepping away from?
I think it depends on individuals. It depends on what you're looking for. There are people who are just, there are people who want the fame. I don't want it personally.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy stepping out and, oh, BBN, hi, BBN. I mean, I don't mind saying hi to people, but I don't like the fact that I could be walking on the streets of an entirely different city in the UK and someone recognizes me. So it was very creepy when I first moved, because I used to get that a lot in Nigeria. I would go to a restaurant with my friends. It's either someone who was dining there knows me, or a waiter or a waitress. And it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
Because you rarely had private moments. And then somewhere at the back of my mind, I always felt like, and some of them don't even come to say hi. They wait until you've gone and then they send a message.
Oh my God, that's like a stalker.
It's very creepy.
Oh my God, that's scary.
So imagine coming, traveling all the way from Nigeria to the UK, a city I've never been to in my entire life, and someone is texting you, "Were you the one I saw on the bus?"
Oh my goodness.
You were wearing, I'm like, what is going on? Can you? So yeah, so whatever advice I'm going to give you, I think people should just know what they want. If you can handle the fame, I can't handle it. I'm not very okay with it. I want to live a very simple life.
Yeah.
So, which is why I've been playing with the idea of leaving Facebook permanently. I just want to live a very simple and secluded life with my friends, my family. That's just what I want. The whole popularity and the fame, it was fun. But when you think about every other thing that comes with it, especially with what has been happening in the past couple of months,
I don't enjoy that bit at all.
So if you're looking to get famous on Facebook, either to monetize your influencership, I mean, I wish you all the best, but what the only thing I can say is just stay true to yourself, so that if should anything happen, should things go wrong, based on what you've been putting out there, people can at least say, I know she could not have possibly done this. That's one of the things that has been going for me, because I've been very transparent with my affairs, my social media affairs, so to say. So sometimes when certain things happen, you get to see a lot of people say, no, that's not Bibia. Mm-hmm. Bibia can't do that. And most times they are always right. So whatever you're doing, just make sure you don't overdo, or you don't do things that you regret several years from now. One of the experiences I had in the course of starting my new job was having my employers do a background check on me. And one of the things they checked social media, they checked for negative news and everything. Mm-hmm. So all of the dramas that have been happening on Facebook, it scared me, because I thought they were going to consider that, but luckily they did not.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you're going to be doing whatever opinion you're going to be having, and with the way the world currently is, there are certain opinions that you shouldn't have. And even if for any reason you think about them, you shouldn't voice them, especially if you're looking at playing on bigger stage much later in life. So you just keep whatever it is outside social media. You can talk about it with your friends. And if possible, you know, just change your mindset, because to the largest extent, my mindset was changed on social media. I didn't know about feminism until I got on Facebook. I didn't know about being liberal, being pro-LGBTQ. I'm almost agnostic now. Most of those things, I got to, you know, I started questioning a lot of things just by being on social media, reading different views. So keep an open mind and, you know, just don't bully people on social media. Cyberbullying is really messed up, and I don't think any normal human being should be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You talk about the part of cyberbullying, and I've also mentioned how much I admire the different paths that you take. But there is a side of you that I feel like, no, I don't want to be a Bibian. There is everyone hurling insults, people drawing speculations, and you have to keep, you know, having to respond to these people all the time. And I'm like, yo, it's hard to be a Bibian. I don't think I can do that.
Initially, I did not used to respond to them. Like, it started way before 2017. People coming up with just making speculations, flat-out accusations, and, you know, they just write rubbish, some with their real accounts, and recently some fake accounts coming up with different idea of what they think or who they think I am. They would write some of these things and I'll completely ignore them. But I've come to realize that most times when you don't give a voice to these things, it works. It's either they stop or it emboldens them to continue.
Yeah.
So I have just decided this is where I'm drawing the line. I don't want you going here. I don't want you talking about my partner. I'm going to share pictures of my partner. I'm going to write about my partner if I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell me. I've had people advising me, oh, stop sharing his pictures. Stop sharing pictures. I'm like, this is part of my life.
Yeah.
If I share about my getting admission to study, if I share about passing my courses, if I share about my vacations, why the hell should I not share about going out on a date with my partner? Why shouldn't I share pictures? It's not like I'm not coming to tell you our life stories. I'm just curating memories like I've always done. 1 year from now, I'm going to look at this, and depending on where I am in life, I'm either going to be happy or, you know, relive whatever memories we had. So why shouldn't I do it? Because you're not comfortable with it. At what point, where exactly do you draw the line between letting me do what I want to do that does not affect you in any way? Mm-hmm. And you stepping on my rights to do some of these things. So I've just decided to draw the line there. But then I realized that continuing to talk about it was always going to piss me off, because the more I try to talk about the stupid things that someone said, the more stupid people come to say more things. So it was just beginning to piss me off. And I decided, you know, I'm done with this. I cut off everybody entirely. Now, it's so bad now that if you're not friends with me on Facebook, you can't comment on my post. You can't send me messages. So you try to send me a message, you're going to get a prompt that says this person, this user is not accepting messages from followers and from the public here.
Yeah.
So I would never read your message, not even as message request or spam or anything. I'm never going to get it. So my Instagram is set to private. So you can't even follow me. You can't see anything about me on Instagram. You can't send me messages. If you follow me on IG and I don't follow you back, you can't send me messages either. So it was actually a very difficult decision for me to make, because I've had so many genuine people reach out to me through those platforms. But at the end of the day, I had to look at the opportunity cost. I had to try to strike a balance between my need to stay sane and my altruistic need to have people reach out to me when they want to reach out to me. So both the genuine people, the people who are coming to say really mean things, I've just decided to lock everyone out. So now I have my space very, very as sane as I want it to be. And for the past 2 weeks that I've had that, I've not had any reason to worry.
Sigh for you.
Yeah, it was very difficult to do, but it had to be done.
Yeah. You're one of those people that I learned from when it comes to taking social media breaks. There are days, you know, there are a couple of people I'm sure that really enjoy, you know, the kinds of sharings that you do, especially in your earlier years before this whole transformation that you had to go through. And then when you would announce a break and I'm like, please don't leave. Don't do that. But then I learned over time. So when you would announce a break, I'm like, okay. And that is if we're even lucky that we get an announcement. Sometimes you just disappear and you're like, really? The audacity.
Sometimes I like to do that, because when I announce it, I get messages from people either asking to get my phone number or asking me not to go. And it's just... But I do it for my mental health. And sometimes I like to step back and review my activities over the past couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
If I've been overstepping, have I been doing things that I ordinarily wouldn't do? Have I started seeking validation from people? These things, being in the spotlight, tends to get to you sometimes in ways that you probably didn't realize it could get to you. You get lost in all of, and social media is so loud. It's so loud. There are so many views, different views. You're reading from different angles, people coming with different opinions. So all of those voices, they are all in your head. Somewhere, they are somewhere in your subconscious.
Yeah.
And stepping away from all of it, it helps me to, you know, go through it, sift through it. Is this who I really am? Or am I this person because of the influence of people on social media? I mean, I see absolutely nothing wrong with being influenced by people on social media, but is the influence still in line with the kind of person I really am and want to become? Or have I started deviating as a result of this influence? So stepping away, it helps me, you know, go through all of that. It helps with my mental health, because then I don't have this need to share.
Yeah.
I don't like, oh, I've not posted anything today. People are hoping to read from me. There's no pressure on myself. So it's just me in my space doing what I want to do. And social media helps me focus. It's very ironic, but it helps me focus. So when I step away from social media, it takes a while for me to go through all the withdrawal symptoms. I'm addicted to Facebook. I'm addicted. So it helps me. I go through all the withdrawal symptoms, and then I go through this stage where I'm hyper-focused on other things. So all of the time I devote to Facebook, I move it to something else. So you find me, if I leave Facebook for a month, I probably will do so much. But then it's just like I get on a high and then I come down as soon as I go back to Facebook. And, you know, it's my way of relaxing. But taking time away, it really helps. If I want to do anything, if I want to focus, if I want to, you know, get into a space where it's just me in my world, I leave Facebook. But most times when I'm on Facebook, it's just kind of distraction for me. Maybe I'm anxious about something, waiting for a news. I stay on Facebook, read all some of the stupid things people write and the good ones, the bad ones. We go through all of it. It just distracts me generally. But staying away from Facebook, I would totally recommend it. I used to do it like 1 month every quarter, but taking 6 months away last year, I haven't exactly done that. I'm not taking a break this year.
There's a time when you're threatening to go back. I was like, please, you just need to come back.
The highest I've done this year is just 1 week.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do it at some point, maybe when I start working. Mm-hmm. And when I work, I'm probably going to do it just to settle in.
So self-care is one of the ways that people take care of their mental health. And now that you have moved countries, I wonder if the definition of self-care has changed for you right now. What was it like? What is it that you were doing in Lagos? Okay, you moved from Abuja to Lagos and now there you are in the UK. So
my idea of self-care was usually to just go out and eat, dress up, go to a fancy restaurant, either alone or with my friend, and just go. But here it's so different and much better because I'm obsessed with nature. I'm this kind of person that will probably see a grasshopper and decide to watch it for the entire day. That's the kind of person I am. But being in Lagos did not really give me that opportunity. So being here has sort of exposed me to that. They have parks here. I look forward to going to a park, which is very strange for a lot of Nigerians. Like, they think I'm not all right. Some are right. Think I'm not okay. I look forward to going for hikes. My idea of a perfect date is probably to just go to some garden and sit, watch different kinds of flowers, watch bees do their pollination. It's something I find really fascinating. So here, my mental health has been at its best since I moved here, apart from sometime last year when I had to deal with the struggle of moving and getting adapted to a new place and all of that. But the whole of this year, it's just been perfect because my partner is someone who also likes nature. So most times we spend our time in nature. We still find time to go do fine dining and all of that. But all the runs, going through places where he grew up, where he used to ride bikes with the boys, they are it's just all the greenery. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And then sometimes just sitting in the garden and watching the dog play around, those are the kind of things that sort of make me really happy. So that's how I take care of my mental health. And then going to the gym too. I have been really more active in the gym here in the UK than I was back in Nigeria. So working out helps, all the whole dopamine, the serotonin and everything that you get after working out, it helps generally. So yeah, there's been a change and for good. I'm hoping it remains that way.
What would you love to leave the listener?
Well, I don't know. I'm not one to give any kind of advice, but I think the first thing I'd say is just try to be a kind person.
Yeah.
Consciously, you just have to consciously decide you want to be a good person. It was one of the decisions I took several years back. Like, I'm going to, before I do anything, first thing I ask myself is, what will a kind person do? What will a good person do? If I were a good person, would I be doing this? If the answer to that is no, I wouldn't. So you just make conscious effort to be kind to people, not because you're hoping that they'll pay you back in some way. It's just the normal and the human thing to do. And if someone's been kind to you, you try to pay it forward. Things that I practice. So, and while you're online surfing the social media and everything, just be very critical of every information you get. It's not everything you see on social media that is true or reliable or should be applied to you. So just check, wait, and see if whatever it is something that can apply to you. And then try to reach out to people, seek support. Mental health issues have been on the increase lately, especially with everything going on social media, people curating the kind of life they want you to see. And, you know, you see it and feel like, oh, you're not doing well enough.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's all a fluke. Sometimes people are actually living that life, but it shouldn't make you feel less of a successful person because someone else, you don't know their stories. Even myself, I've had privileges, I've had support system that people who grew up the same way as I did probably would not have. So you don't judge yourself. You don't use me as a yardstick for yourself. Go on your own journey, practice whatever it is you want to. You want, set your goals for yourself. At the end of the day, this is all going to end with one thing. We're all going to die. So if you beat yourself up because a total stranger is posting that they bought 3 cars this year and you don't even have any money in your account, set your goals, do whatever, you be on your own journey. Yeah. Everybody, we're all on different journeys all together. Mm-hmm. So the support this person gets is not the support you're going to get. And if you decide to let someone's success affect your mental health, at the end of the day, you're going to be the one suffering.
Yeah.
And if for any reason you're already going through this, probably seek, get help from professionals or from people close to you and try to make friends. It's really important. And maybe you could also fall in love. It's nice. I've come to learn.
Oh, yes. All right. Thank you, Vivian, for giving us your time.
Thank you for having me. This has been really good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You feel great?
Yeah.
It matters the most.
It's like I've just gone on confession. I'm Catholic. I was born Catholic. I wanted to say I was Catholic. I'm still Catholic. It's just like I've gone on confession to a priest. Feels good.
I'll tell you the truth. There are days when I go to a priest and man, I can't say some things. I don't want to be side-eyed, no. All right, Vivian, have a great afternoon.
Thank you, you too.
Thank you.
Be on your own journey. There are quite a number of gems to walk away with from this episode, but I'll choose this one as the highlight of the conversation. You could go ahead and share with us on social media which one you walked away with, but before you do so, allow me to thank you for hanging out with us to the very end. If you love this episode, do me a favor and hit the subscribe button in your podcast platform of choice. Also, feel free to share your insights about what connected with you on social media and tag us. We are at hashtag with NavGuzichuanuka on Facebook and Instagram, and on Twitter our handle is at htnkpodcast, or you can use the hashtag htnkinstation. See you in episode 116.